Hello and welcome to Just Around the Corner with Dennis Mansfield. It's a podcast focused on culture, history, travel, and even a little entertainment from time to time. I hope you enjoy traveling with me and with my guests, clients, and friends on each episode. Today's episode is entitled The Importance of Humor in Work and Play with Mr. Jim Peterson. As a business coach, podcaster, and author, I invite you to subscribe to my newsletter by clicking on my website at DennisMansfield.com and hit the button that says subscribe. I think you'll like it. I'm Dennis Mansfield.
Thank you for joining Just Around the Corner with Dennis Mansfield. As John Hay, one of the most famous men of the 19th century, once said, all the great prizes in life are just around the corner. Let's go there together.
Well, it's an honor to have my dear friend Jim Peterson, my classmate from West Point, an amazing man that I have a great deal of fun with. Jim, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, it's great to be here. I appreciate the opportunity. It's a rainy day here in Melbourne, Florida.
Oh, it is. Wait a minute. I thought like Southern California, it never rains in Florida unless there's like a hurricane.
It never rains in California. That is a true, the Sunshine State, does experience its share of, inclement weather, hurricanes being the biggest issue, but we do have, this is actually kind of unusual for Florida, at least us in, middle central, eastern Florida. We don't have, rainy days during the, fall and winter months. They're normally in the summer, but every once in a while, it's bound to happen.
Well, Jim, I'm glad because every day with you is not a rainy day. We just had a lot of days together at our 45th reunion here just a number of weeks ago at West Point. Right. You and I had a marvelous time to reconnect as we have over the years. And it really was the genesis for today's episode because today you and I are going to talk about humor.
Excellent.
Now, in that process, there are a lot of people that think, Jim Peterson must be, he must be a comedian. He must be a stand-up artiste, right? Well, hardly. Tell our viewers and our listeners a little bit about your background. Obviously, West Point graduate, then take it from there.
Sure. I graduated from West Point way back when dinosaurs still roamed the plain, as they say. In 1978, and then pursued a career as an Army officer up until 1995. I then retired, but folks might say, well, wait, thought you had to spend 20 years in. So what happened was due to the fall of the Berlin Wall and the end of Soviet Union communism, the international militaries, including our own, the U.S. Army, began a downsizing initiative, and consequently I was offered an opportunity to retire with 17 years service, a reduced pension, but I took that opportunity. While I was serving, a couple highlights were I had the distinct honor of, we would have never thought this as cadets at West Point, but 10 years after graduation I returned to West Point to be the Lordy Lordy Chief of Protocol Office. So I directed all the VIP events that included U.S. presidents, international dignitaries, kings, entertainers, popular authors, et cetera, et cetera.
So if you were in that position today, you'd be entertaining, a popular author like...
Certainly, all I would need to see would be the initials DM, and that would immediately afford me the opportunity to direct my staff to drop all other activities and focus on your visit to the military academy.
So, well, I tell you what, that must have been an amazing, amazing time in your life. But then you did retire. What did you go into?
Upon retirement in 95, I went to work for the Florida Department of Labor, but a very unique one-time position that they established at the Kennedy Space Center, the headquarters for the Kennedy Space Center. I was the Florida Department of Labor representative on KSC, the Kennedy Space Center, to assist those folks who are going to be transitioning their careers from NASA to the civilian workforce based on.
So you would do both staff as well as, I imagine, astronauts who were retiring as well.
Yes, and having said that, two connections back to West Point were, one was I was in the cafeteria and saw an individual that I thought I remembered, you know, how you make that eye connection and think, I'm sure I know. And the bottom line was, it was a class of 1979, we of course being class of 78, it was a class of 1979 West Pointer who was a NASA astronaut. And he was not retiring yet, but I did talk with him a little bit about considering options upon when he did retire. The other was the director of the Kennedy Space Center at that time was a retired Air Force two-star general who I had the privilege of being involved with when he visited the West Point as part of a superintendent's conference. He was the superintendent of the Air Force Academy. So, yes, it was an interesting assignment.
Well, Jim, in the middle of all of that, I can vouch from the fact that when we were 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, you always had a wit about you that in the middle of these incredibly impactful meetings, especially in your time, both of protocol at West Point, but also with your time with NASA, that would break up the very formal and stodgy nature of what we normally live in with business and profession and maybe those in military. But it always came about through wit. From your perspective, what do you see as the difference between someone who is witty and someone who is, programmed to be funny, who's a professional humorist?
Right.
What do you see the difference be?
I would say that the distinction between the two is I think that the professional comedian, of course, whether you look at the old school folks like, we're of a certain age now, Denny, that, I'll just go ahead and say it. In another 2 weeks, I'll be 67. So whether you think of someone like Mort Saul or more currently Jim Gaffigan and everybody in between, whether it's Carol Burnett or Jerry Seinfeld or whatever, I think they're very conscious of the fact that they have to flip a switch and perform, whereas the witticist, the person who tries to express wit in certain circumstances, even serious ones, it's more spontaneous, and they're trying to make the situation as serious or intense as it might be. They're trying to alleviate some of that pressure and stress associated with the situation. So it's more spontaneous.
Let's go with the idea that when people are involved in an intense discussion and all of a sudden there's a pattern interrupt, what tends to be their response to humor that you've found over the years?
I've generally found that it's been fairly well accepted. And recognized to be a much-needed bit of very brief respite from whatever the nature, serious nature or serious intent of the discussion or the meeting has been. In fact, I've got a cute little anecdote if you'd like to hear one.
Love to.
So one of my positions, my last position in the Army, in fact, before I retired in 1995, was in 1994. Picture this scenario. We are literally in a kind of get smart bunker, six stories underground of NATO's military headquarters during the war in Bosnia. And there is going to be a top secret operational briefing considering where the howitzers have been moved around by the Serbians and are going to shell a particular village. And the, you know, obviously extremely serious and sure. consequential meeting and briefing. And the briefing officer, who happened to be a U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel, all names remain confidential, naturally, but
sure.
The projector was on. It had a image of the NATO military headquarters with the 13 nation flags and whatnot. And the briefing officer approached the podium, tripped over the cable for the projector, and not only disconnected the projector, but knocked the projector off the stand. Everyone naturally was aghast. When the murmur through the assembled senior ranks of NATO's military, about 100 officers, when the murmur settled down, the briefing officer, who had a lapel microphone on, wireless, yeah. Turned from the screen to the assembled group and said, "Gentlemen, that concludes my brief." And and everybody, you know, hurrahed and guffawed and whatnot, and so it was, I think, a great illustration of the how you can introduce a bit of wit and humor into otherwise serious situations.
You know, I am a big fan of comedians. You and I both are. We love humor. We love theater. You and I have talked about a pension to occasionally go into British accents.
I should say, Nigel, it's good to talk with you again, of course. You know,
it's a pure pleasure.
And in fact, we've got a bit, I think there's a bit of static on the line. But I'd just like to say, in case we get cut off, that our next yes. time we meet, we must have yeah. a cup of, I believe, as the Yanks say, a cup of yes. Joe rather than a spot of tea. Bob's your uncle.
That's right. So I take my son, my pollster, which is a real strange thing to say because I use this pollster for a lot of things. We decide we're going to go see Larry the Cable Guy. Just the best, right? I mean, blue collar tour. It's his isolated deal. Gonna go see him. Of course, his famous line, of course, ends up always being "Get her done," right?
Yeah.
Very, very funny. He comes out on the stage. He opens up his laptop. Flips it up. Opens it. It's dead. He stops. There's no humor. I'm expecting a punchline, right? Yes. A witticism.
Yes, indeed.
And he says, he goes off stage, and there's like 3 minutes of dead silence, which, can you imagine 3 minutes in front of 19, 20,000 people? Comes back, "Get her done." Everybody goes, "Get her done."
Yeah.
Opens it up again. And it's dead too.
Mm.
The power's gone on both. He's got no jokes.
Right, he's got a conundrum.
He has a conundrum. And the crowd goes from wildly enthusiastic to people booing him within a period of about 7 minutes. Mm. And the thing that hit me out of it, the life experience out of it, other than screaming, "Boo, get the bum off,"
yeah.
which I told my son not to follow me because that was, yeah. And the pollster next to me kept saying, you're going to drop in the polls with attitudes like that, Mr. Mansfield. So I quit bullying. Anyway, was that comedians oftentimes can find the rhythm of something based on their pre-programmed understanding of what makes things funny. Soon as you put anybody that's like that with a high attention to detail into a situation that spontaneity has to rule, they fail.
Right.
Absolutely fail. Yeah. And so I would say, Jim, one of the things I've loved about you, of course, other than your incredible use of accents and being a Floridian, my guess is that you got a little, down home humor sometimes. You come up around talking about automobiles and such.
Yes, sir. We also have, as you well know, and of course, this isn't necessarily a Floridian accent because.
But it's close.
Most of the folks in Florida. In fact,
you got some gator in your teeth there. Get it out.
Well, I just want to talk about the Gators. As well as Croc. But
go ahead.
Most people in Florida are not Floridians. They're from someplace else in the United States or internationally.
That upsets me.
So I don't know that we've got what we would call a Florida cracker accent. So I spent half my life in Europe and half my life abroad off and on. But my fondest memory of childhood in Florida was when my dad took me for an airboat ride. The big props on the back of the airboat. And we were not required to wear seat belts back in the 1960s. So I was sitting about 8 feet up on a elevated chair. The boat started and they moved the throttle forward and it flipped me out of the chair backwards and I landed in the river. I was a fond swimmer at the time, and so I didn't have any problems with treading water and waiting for the boat to come back around. And my dad said, "Jimmy, do you want to stay in?" And I was 10 years old, and I looked at him and I said, "Stay in? What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, go swimming or something." And I said, "I don't know." And then he said, "Well, if you do, watch out for the gators." I was in that boat like in, 2.5 seconds. So
I see your dad was a motivational speaker.
He was a motivational speaker and knew how to deal with young people. So
here we are, speaking of young people, young versions of ourselves. I too will turn that magic age that you just mentioned. Did you say 47? Did I hear it right? 47.
It may have been the connection with the audio, but I believe it's 67. Hard to accept, I know.
Okay. I guess I'm that way on the outside. On the inside, there's still this part of me. Now, I want to take you back to bayonet training.
Bayonet training, the spirit of the bayonet.
The spirit of the bayonet. There's two types of people, what? The quick and the?
Dead. Right. Slash and Perry.
Slash and Perry. I always thought that was a rock group.
Right.
But anyway, so here we are, and we've got this, it's summer of 74, summer of 75. All the Vietnam veteran officers are exiting out of Vietnam. They're coming for different training things. We've got this guy high and tight. Flat top, got not the Floridian soft Southern accent, but by God, I'll tell you what, right now, it's more Georgian, and it's got a, I'm still angry that the Confederacy lost, and by golly, and so he's up there, and he's telling everybody all about it, and how to use the bayonet, and he put more syllables into words that I even knew could happen. It's unbelievable, Jimmy, and so I'm in the back, which is where I normally was academically as well as experientially, in the back row. And he's up there. He gets all done with how to kill Charlie Kong, with the bayonet, just how to do it. And he's looking and he goes, "Gentlemen, are there any questions?" Well, I, being a dear fan of Cheech and Chong at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And remembered a piece slight piece from one of their gigs about a police officer, Officer Studenko, who was addressing the students. When he asked the question about, the, you know, are there any questions in that skit, I then took the words out of Cheech or Chong's mouth and applied it to the Slash and Perry man from Northern Georgia with the attitude of the, you know what I'm saying? Yes. And I said, I leaned next to one of our classmates so that he couldn't quite see my mouth. And I said, yeah, dude, who does your hair, man?
Hey, man. Yeah, Cheech and Chong, classics, of course.
Yeah, it established a baseline and a meridian. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? For humor. Needless to say, the officer in charge, intent on turning us into killing machines, had wit and had humor and started laughing.
Right.
I mean, my God, the guy's head could have been a landing carrier, you know what I mean, for a naval check.
If I may, I can share a similar little story with you. As you well know, when you're at West Point, your summer training might involve attending airborne school or jungle warfare training in Panama or whatever. Many of our classmates had completed airborne school around their junior year, and so they were airborne jump qualified, as we say, upon graduation. I actually went to airborne school after a year on active duty. So I was still a second lieutenant, but I went to airborne school, Fort Benning, Georgia. And I can remember our safety briefing before our first jump. There were about 100 of us sitting in the bleachers in our fatigues on a hot July afternoon. And our airborne instructor said,
I'm hearing you sweat while you're sitting there in the bleachers.
Beads of sweat. Our airborne instructor said, now, gentlemen, I know that some of you are concerned about the safety of a airborne jump. It's your first jump. He said, now, you've been extremely well trained by myself and other airborne sergeants here, so don't worry about it. You're going to be safe. When you jump out the airplane and you count to four, because you were supposed to count to yourself 4,000, by that time, your parachute should have opened. They had a static ripcord, not a pull cord. Right. And when you look up, if you count 4,000, when you look up, if you still see a sky of blue instead of a parachute canopy of white, don't panic. Just reach down, pull the handle on your reserve chute, and toss the chute out and away from you. Now, if you still see a sky of blue, when you hit the ground, I don't want you lollygagging and complaining and moaning and whatnot. I want you to get up and double time, run off that drop zone back to the bus to get another jump. And of course, we thought, oh, well, you know, we're all dead men, you know. So, but we survived our five jumps and made it through successfully.
So. Well, I think that's great psychology as you think about it. He's not addressing the negative, he's accentuating the positive.
Right.
Now, Jim, you are a man of many voices. Now, we're talking about spontaneity. We're talking about humor, breaking the pattern. The pattern's going this way, and suddenly humor cuts across. When you lived in Europe, did you ever have a time when you were living with the Germans and had any of the French people come in and understand that the German and the French have different ways of communicating?
Yeah, thank you, Danny, for that question. I appreciate it very much. Of course, yes, we did have German officers. In fact, I was assigned next to Jim. By the way, my name is Colonel Jörg Reifsken.
And George
Weinstein. Yeah, George. Yeah, George. Or you would say, of course, George, George Bush, for example.
Yes.
Yeah, very nice.
Ich verstehe das, danke.
Ja, du sprichst ganz gut Deutsch jetzt. Und wir haben, Moment bitte. Ja, zweimal Bier und ein Wiener Schnitzel.
Zwei.
I guess it's right. If you may recall from, Brad Pitt's Inglourious Basterds. Yeah. That's the name of a film, as we know, so I'm not using profanity or being inappropriate. You may recall the wonderful scene in there where the Americans who are speaking German to the German officer from the SS, they give themselves away when they order three beers, and they hold up the American style of saying three, which is this, and of course the Germans say three like this. So yes. So yeah, and
so think about this for a second. Even in that cultural iconic difference, immediately there's a separation.
Yes.
You know, this versus this. They can tell. But you lived all over Europe. You had to, as a young man, you had to become adept at understanding cultural differences, didn't you? With humor.
Yeah, for the most part, of course, most of my living in Europe as a child, as a young man, was from age off and on. It was like a year in Melbourne, Florida, and then 2 years in the south of Paris. Oh, woe is me. Then 2 years back in the U.S. and maybe a year in Naples, Italy, you know, that type of thing. So I lived in Europe as a child off and on from about age 6 to age 14. And then I returned to Europe when my first European assignment in the army was in the Dusseldorf, Germany area. And then I lived in, and of course traveled all over Europe, and then we also lived in later in Belgium. So yes, I have had the experience. Much of it was as a child, but even then, it's interesting, you and I both know as public speakers that paralanguage, as they say formally, which is known as nonverbal communications or body language, is probably 75% of your actual message that you're trying to communicate. So I can give you a very quick example. This, which in America most people realize to be Hook'em Horns, you know, for the University of Texas in Austin, UTA, go Longhorns. That's what it generally means in the U.S. I will not say what it means in Spain, but suffice it to say, it's not a gesture that's universally accepted from a positive outlook if you live in Spain.
They're not cheering at a football game.
A football game. It has more negative connotations associated with it. So, I did have to learn about the culture, which was just part of a natural process of integrating into the society and, you know, learning key words and phrases and certain gestures and mannerisms, of course. So, very interesting.
Well, you know, Jim, the topic of humor in our life, today's episode, can come in different ways, especially with accents. I remember at a certain point I took on a second job when Susan and I were first married, and it was a nighttime job, so it was a waiter. And the particular restaurant, you had to have a name tag. So if you didn't have your name tag, take one off the wall of a former employee. And so I didn't bring my name tag, and there was one that said Pierre. So I put Pierre's on my vest, and it was a lovely restaurant, still one of my favorite restaurants. And I walked up to the table and I said, welcome everyone to the Northwoods Inn. I'd love to have you here. My name is Pierre. I shall be your garçon. So if anything you need, I will get. So I don't speak French, okay? I don't even speak French fries. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you.
Yeah. And so I end up faced with having someone say, oh, Patricia just came back from France, where she's been there for 5 years as an exchange student through high school and then into college. I'm like, tick, 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 tick. And so Patricia said something to Pierre. And she said, and I look at her and I go, yeah, you are very good. Instead of me speaking French back to you, for the sake of all these dirty pig dog Americans, let me just tell you right now, exceptional. I would think you were born there, Patricia. Born there, I tell you.
Well, one of my experiences.
She smiled, right?
You know, one of my experiences in Paris was we went to Paris with friends of ours from Beaumont, Texas. The young lady that was with us, you know, we were in our early 30s at the time, and so the young lady that was with us had lived in Paris, and then for 3 years, and then had taken French for 4 years in college, but she spoke French with a Southern accent, a Texas accent, and so you know, whatever,
and not was, Southern France, correct. Southern U.S.,
not Lyon or you know, the French Riviera or whatnot, Southern France, but yeah. So she spoke with a Texas accent and ordered for the four of us, and the waiter had his little pad with his pen and stood there the whole time, and I thought, this is unique, because you know he must memorize whatever the orders are. When she finished, the waiter in quite refined English said, I speak English quite well, thank you, could you repeat your orders? Because in Paris, some Parisians felt that if you did not speak Parisian French, that it didn't warrant their entertaining your attempt to speak French. So she had to repeat it all.
And they say the French are arrogant. I don't understand that.
Yes, I don't know. I don't know where that comes from. The other thing that I always think about whenever I think of French and French accents is one of my favorite scenes from one of my favorite comedic actors, Peter Sellers, in his Inspector Clouseau role, when
the best role he ever did.
The best of it. Chief Inspector Dreyfus says, after he's frustrated with Peter Sellers, Inspector Clouseau, he says to him, "Man, how does an idiot get to be a policeman?" And Peter Sellers, in his typical deadpan, you know, Clouseau says, "It's quite simple. You simply apply, fill out the application, you know." So I always think of Peter Sellers whenever I think of French accent.
As you mentioned earlier, we both do public speaking. We're both writers. You're a marvelous poet. Your works have followed you and have preceded you. And I want you to know that as a public speaker, as a person that the two of us have the chance to speak to many, many people, I actually use Clouseau as an example, but I update it with Steve Martin. And there's a scene, of course, where Steve Martin says, "Get me the best English accent teacher that there is." And then the scene flips to this very matron looking woman who says, "I would like to buy a hamburger." And so obviously he's there and he goes, "I would like to buy a hamburger." She goes, "No, not hamburger, a hamburger. I would like to buy a Timburger." "Not Timburger, hamburger. I," say it after me, "I would like to While this is going on, I actually use this clip while I'm teaching people about love languages, that you can speak a language in your life, how you love people, how you work with them. that people can't hear because the accent's so bad, meaning the application of that love language into someone else's life is just terrible. So the idea of suddenly becoming this expert in French that Steve Martin or Inspector Clouseau wanted to do to become an American was simply a foolishness. Jim, I know we're coming into a close here, and I want you to understand something. You make me laugh, and I love...
As do you, my friend. As do you, my friend.
I've always loved the spontaneity. I'll have you on again, because I think that we had some tech problems going into today. We'll get them ironed out.
Absolutely. I have to tell you, though, that if you ask me who my favorite comedian was or is, it would certainly be Steve Martin. I appreciate his humor, his wit, his perspective, his body and facial movements that add humor to it. So, and I'll close with one thought, which is I'd like to offer the audience a piece of advice, which is I think I might have sent this to you in one of my emails, but
I keep all your profound information.
One of my life mottos that I've adapted over time, it may be, in fact, my number one life motto that I developed, which is, if you can't laugh at yourself, try better jokes. there is one other that universally applicable to understanding human nature, in fact, even animal nature, which is you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it bathe. And so those are two thoughts I'd like to leave for the audience.
Well, Jim, I have a reciprocal gift for you, and it's a Steve Martin one. He said, when I want to feel funny, I put a piece of bologna in my shoes. And then I just feel funny.
Yes, sir.
Danke schön für alles. Thank you for everything.
Ja, wunderschön, das war ein sehr gutes Tag. Thank you very much, Danny. It's always a pleasure to see you and talk with you. I really appreciate it, my brother.
Let's do it again, and when we do it, we'll talk movies on the next one.
Absolutely.
Movies with Jimmy. What do you think of that, Mr. Protocol?
Young Frankenstein, of course, at the top of the list.
Frankenstein.
Yeah, you say Frederick. Is it Frederick Frankenstein?
What hump?
That's wrong. I'll be normal. Right. Okay. Thank you, Dennis. I appreciate it.
Okay. God bless you, man.
Okay. Out here.